Okay, so we've all seen some news lately, and probably the biggest news that we've seen for the past week was inflation hitting 31-year high in October. So from 2020 October to 2021 October, the inflation rate was 6.2% if you look at the CPI. Now, I won't get to too much about the CPI because, you know, some people say the CPI over time has changed because, you know, you have substitutions, you have hedonics, you have all of these adjustments to the CPI to kind of change how the CPI measures inflation. But I won't get into that. What I want to get into in this episode is I want to go into whether or not the inflation is transitory and how transitory the inflation is. Now, of course, that's a very hard topic to go into. And, you know, anyone can be right, anyone can be wrong with that. And so, I mean, there's obviously a lot of room for error. But now, right now, the consensus generally is that inflation is transitory. And, you know, you can see that roughly within the bond market. You know, the bond market interest rates are still super low. And right now, it's not just the Fed keeping interest rates low. You know, the bond market believes that we're going to get this transitory inflation. And so with that, you know, at least the bond investors are not very worried. And the general consensus is just that inflation will come and it will go. Now, of course, the Fed said that inflation would have left a couple of months ago. But, you know, I think they now say that, okay, well, it's going to go on for a bit longer than we initially thought. Okay, but so some of the problems that some of the risks you have out there that prevent inflation from being as transitory as we may think it is the demand, the increased demand on inflation. So when you have a supply shock, when you have, you know, falling supply that will quickly come back, you know, that inflation is transitory. So if you just had, you know, rising commodity prices or something because in 2020 there was cutting to production or, you know, factories closed or whatever, then you'd have some type of transitory, very quick inflation that comes and leaves. But the problem is if you have inflation that is caused by increased demand, by more money coming into the economy, then the problem is, well, maybe inflation is not transitory. And if you have more money in the system, well, how long can you go without pouring more money into the system again? You know, are you going to have to consistently pour more money into the system, or is it just a one-time thing because of COVID? Now, that we really don't know because it's up to the policymakers. And, you know, you could kind of look at history and look at what governments have done before, but that's, again, also another topic for another time. But what we see is that the real GDP since COVID is actually right now it's higher than it was before COVID. So, you know, well, that alone says, okay, well, maybe the economy is good. Real GDP is higher than it was before COVID. But then you're also seeing inflation. So really what that means is that the demand since COVID grew far more than the amount, the growth of the supply, right? So you're seeing a lot of demand side pressures, demand increases in the economy that's causing this inflation to happen. Now, in the 1970s, you know, a lot of people say, well, maybe we'll have a scenario like we had in the 1970s. Now, the 1970s really began with a big supply shock. You know, the price of oil just completely flew up to the moon, basically. And so you had this huge supply shock in the 1970s that led to the stagflation. So in the 1970s, you know, you saw that supply really, really fell. You know, demand grew, but not very quickly. But today you're seeing a very different story in terms of supply and demand. The inflation number only tells you the same thing. It just tells you inflation. But when you look at supply and demand, you're seeing a little bit of difference. So the 1970s, low supply, you know, moderately high demand. right now, since 2020, you see very high demand and slightly increasing supply. So you're kind of seeing a different story here between the two times. And, you know, a part of that is that COVID kind of forces people to buy goods instead of services. So maybe that aspect, that little piece of it is more of a transitory part of it, and people go more into services. But then at the same time, you have the whole aspect of businesses not being able to find employees. And that's a big problem as well. But right now, you're mainly seeing a lot of rising commodity prices, like oil. When you try to put gasoline in your car, you're just seeing prices of that rise every single day. And, you know, everyone's mad, but ever since 2012, you had very low CapEx, you know, capital expenditure spending on the oil and gas industry. So there was very little investment into these companies. They didn't drill new mines and drill new wells. They didn't explore. And so what you see now is that the supply of oil and gas is falling. Now, what you're seeing more so is the demand increasing, but you're not seeing the supply, you know, catch up to the demand. So that's a big problem. And if you want to invest more, you know, CapEx, then it can take 10 years to start producing oil from a new oil well. So, you know, when you go through the exploration and then you go through all the government regulations, you know, it takes a very, very long time. And then you set up your drills. It just takes very long. Now, shale may be a bit different, but generally speaking, the commodity sector is very, very cyclical. And one reason why it's so cyclical is because everything takes so long. And so you could see the supply of oil start to catch up, although the problem is, well, how long is that going to take? And it may take a very long time. Now, if you're looking at some metals, it's kind of different in an interesting way. If you're looking at the supply of things like copper or aluminum or even nickel, you see that the supply of these metals are actually rising pretty quickly. And, you know, the prices are rising very quickly too over the past year. And that is because the demand has been rising faster than the supply. They've both been rising, but just the demand is a bit further than the supply as well. So you're seeing a lot of these demand force increases and supply is increasing too. So if demand just is rising and supply is rising too, then the only way that inflation is not transitory is if demand starts to cut back. And now you're seeing the Fed probably a week ago started tapering. You know, they went from $120 billion monthly of QE to now $100 billion of QE every month. And so cut back $15 billion of treasury purchases, $5 billion of mortgage-backed security purchases. But really, they're still doing QE. You know, so it's not like they're raising interest rates by now. I mean, they can't raise interest rates, because if you look at debt, the debt we have in the economy, if you look at public debt or even private debt, they've increased a ton since 2020, right? When you throw interest rates at record low levels, the debt increases. And so, well, how are people going to pay that back? And also, how is the federal government going to keep on funding how are they going to fund all of their deficits? Right. In 2020, you saw the federal government have a budget deficit of like over $3 trillion. So, I mean, how, if the Fed does not keep on buying treasuries, and, you know, if inflation, if, you know, does not appear to be as transitory as it is, then who's going to buy up all the treasuries? And so maybe if the bond market starts to question the transitoriness of inflation, you're going to have more problems. You're going to have rising interest rates, and, you know, to the point where interest rates go higher than where the Fed wants it to be. And then you have a whole new problem the Fed has to solve. And by the way, the US right now is at all-time high trade deficits as well. So it's not just, you know, it's not just debt, it's not just, you know, fiscal spending deficits. They're also at an all-time high in terms of trade deficits. Now, that's interesting because trade deficits to you are inflationary because you're getting goods and services. You know, you're buying more than you are selling to other people. So you have a higher supply of goods and services. And, you know, even with that deflationary force, you're still going into this 30-year record high inflation period. Which kind of brings a little bit of worry, because if you have an economy, if you have a global economy that starts to become less and less globalized, if countries try to rely on their own economies more and more, then you're going to have even more inflationary pressures. You're going to have a less efficient economy because, you know, you're seeing tariffs go around, you're seeing capital controls, you're seeing companies that are banned in other countries more and more nowadays, especially since 2020 and back when Trump was president. So if you kind of detach from the global economy, the amount of inflation you have will just keep on increasing, especially since if you look at China's exports since COVID, they've been 40% higher since COVID. And now, okay, that's a huge deflationary force to the world, to the United States especially, because, you know, the United States is the biggest importer. And the production of China since COVID has also been 20% higher. So again, more increase in supply, but what you're seeing is that demand is rising so fast that even the increased production can't keep up with the demand. So in addition to all this trading, international trade, you're also seeing record high shipping costs. You know, since 2020, the price of shipping has basically become 8 times higher. And, you know, it's not just that the price of shipping has become higher, you know, the speed of shipping has also slowed. So you're seeing slower and slower delivery too. And a lot, again, you see some part of it is because of the huge trade deficit that the US has with China. So when China ships goods and services to the US, you know, they're shipping back empty crates. They're shipping back empty containers because they have such a big trade deficit that they can't ship goods and services back into the boat. And so, you know, you have all of these big problems in your supply chain. You have a huge increase in demand. Again, there's this element where inflation is also a psychological phenomena too. At least what starts the inflationary run when you have good fundamentals to support inflation. So if everybody believes that inflation is going to happen, well, then inflation is going to happen. So, I mean, if inflation doesn't cool down and if the Fed doesn't, you know, taper fast enough, if they don't start raising interest rates, well, maybe that could just turn into an inflationary spiral. And that's not good for the economy, obviously. And I mean, if you look at US consumers, the consumer confidence has fallen again. And even inventories of businesses right now are at record lows. So if you look at the inventories of businesses relative to how much they're selling, right, it's at record lows because you have this big supply chain issue, you have this huge demand increase, and although your production is increasing, it's not going to increase nearly as fast as you need it to. And you have companies who are saying, you know, they were going to move their production from China to the United States. And now the problem is, well, first of all, that takes a ton of time. That takes a ton of money to do. Labor costs more in the U.S. than in China. So you're going to have either more inflation, you're going to have higher prices, or you're going to end up having lower earnings for the company, which, you know, obviously the company wouldn't like. But also you have to train a whole new labor force. You have to train new employees, and a lot of them don't really, you know, first of all, that takes a lot of money, that takes a lot of time, the wages are going to be higher, especially since you're seeing a record high level of U.S. firms that can't find workers. So, I mean, right now there's, if you're looking in terms of percentages, you're seeing more people hire workers than there are people that are unemployed. So basically, everyone can find a job right now if they wanted to. Granted, they have the most base skills, the most basic skills. You can go and find a job. But people aren't taking jobs because a lot of people after COVID just, you know, thought, well, okay, well, I don't want to work this job, so I'd rather stay unemployed. Now, the labor force participation rate has fallen yet again, like it has since 2008. And I guess that you can attribute a big part of that into retirement. And that's a whole new issue that you have to face. The baby boomers, a huge population going into retirement. And, you know, if you look at the Japanese story, that was not a very pleasant one. Their whole workforce exited. Their unemployment rate was very low, but that's because everyone chose to stop working. And so, you know, their economy just basically stagnated forever. And that's not something you want to see in the U.S. Anytime soon. And so because of that, you're seeing wages increase. Now, they're not increasing as fast as inflation, so that's another problem, but you're seeing wages increase, which is also inflationary. And then when you have wages increase, you know, that the cost of goods that, you know, the company produces, who's hiring the workers, the cost of those increase, and then wages increase again, and you have this inflationary spiral with wage increases. But I think one more factor that you have to look at is the housing, you know, the real estate market. And that's a huge market that's been affected globally since COVID, because every country decided to lower interest rates, QE, you know, you lower long-term interest rates. Well, one thing people do is they start taking out mortgages. Another thing people do is they take their money out of cash and they start buying financial assets like cryptocurrency, like Dogecoin, all of this. And well, one, again, back to the mortgages, you're seeing, well, of course, record high housing prices, just like record high everything right now. But the problem with housing prices increasing, it's not that housing prices are necessarily in a bubble everywhere, although they are in some places. The big problem is the disconnect between the price of renting a house, and the housing prices themselves. If you look at the correlation between housing prices and the price of rent, they've always been very similar, and they've always followed each other very tightly. But right now they're very disconnected. The price of housing is very high, but the price of rent has just slowly moved upwards. They haven't really caught up to the fast increase in the price of housing. And so when you're seeing that, you have to look at the future of CPI inflation, because you know the CPI, that it hasn't caught up to what could happen in the future. And what could easily happen in the future is that rent prices increase in the future. And once that happens, well, you'll have more inflationary forces. You'll have a lot of people that can't afford rent. And I mean, this is not a prediction, but what could happen is, well, now politicians come in and you know, create more money, and they have more of these entitlement programs. And in the US, in history, in the past, there were very few entitlement programs. Most of government spending was not on entitlement programs. But nowadays, most of, like 70% of US government spending is just giving out money that doesn't benefit the economy. But even the infrastructure packages and stuff like this, you know, you could say it's certainly more efficient way of spending money than when you're just giving people stimulus checks. And if stimulus checks becomes the future of the United States, well, then you're never going to see demand start falling, and you're just going to see inflation forever and ever.